Hype and Nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
Meh.
Meh, why? What's that for?
I don't know. I just don't feel like doing anything today.
Yeah, I can kind of tell.
But we gotta make some pods.
Yep.
Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. We are the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. And how are you doing tonight, Jen?
Meh, I think kind of sums it up. Yes. Meh. I'm sick. I think I have the flu, but it's no big deal.
Yeah, I don't know what the energy vampire was that came over here today, but it's got a hold of us both. I haven't been able to just feel awake and alive and happy and wonderful all day.
Well, I've kind of got that, but that's because I'm anemic right now. You don't have that.
No, I'm just a little off. You know how it happens. I know that I didn't really get enough sleep last night, and I tried a couple times through the day to kind of catch that up, and then at one point I thought, oh, well, I just need to eat, so I did that and didn't change. And I had some coffee, and that didn't do any good. So, it ain't going to work today. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it goes
it
sometimes.
It ain't going to get there. You know what? I should look at the document I made for the show. That'd be smart. So, on our last program, we told the harrowing tale of the runaway tuna can that magically
it was magic
behind our stove, and that it was really not an easy place to get a tuna can out of. And at the time we weren't really sure. I mean, we had sort of a plan in action, but we didn't really know how that was going to go. And I had asked a friend of mine who's he's a real handy guy. And he's also a really tall person that'll come in later on the story. But I asked him for help. I figured, well, if I try to do this by myself, God only knows what'll happen. Jen can't really do anything. So I'll get somebody I know who can probably help me with it. And, well, it was actually a week ago now, last Friday, he came over in the morning, and my original thinking on this was what we would do is we would take our cockatiels out of the house. We have pet carriers for them. And I was going to wake Jen up. And she and I together would get the birds carried out of here.
Right, because we were fearful. The reason for this was we were fearful if you move the stove, you might bump however it's connected to the gas. And this could cause a gas leak, which, you know, we could probably turn off or fix rather quickly. And, you know, all the humans involved would be safe, but the birds, probably not. It could kill them. So we were going to stick them in the pet carriers, which we do when we take them to the vet, which is why they don't like the pet carriers, and take them outside where at least they'd be out of range. They'd have, you know, fresh air.
Yeah.
You know, that was the idea.
And a few days before that, I went all around here trying to figure out, you know, just in the case of emergency. I mean, it's the kind of thing, honestly, if you live indoors, you should know anyway. But I went all around trying to figure out where the gas main is. And I'm like 95% sure I know where it is now. And in true conformity to the TARDIS-like construction of this thing we live in. The gas main isn't even like a standard gas main, because normally, from everything that I've seen online, gas mains have the main valve has, it's hard to explain if you've never seen one, but it has this control, for lack of a better term, that usually, if you want to turn it, you have to use either a special tool or you can also use a crescent wrench. And you take the tool or the wrench and you grip it around this connector and then you turn it one way and that turns the whole gas main on or off. Well, ours just seems to have kind of a very standard looking valve that you can just grip with your hand and turn. And believe me, I've looked everywhere on here and I can tell from everything that I've seen that this thing I'm looking at has to be the gas main. So that was just another one of those weird, unexpected things, but it makes perfect sense here because everything here is weird. We've done our best to try to make it less weird in the 8 years we've lived in this thing, but we didn't install the gas main that was here long before we got here. So anyway, I found that and I figured, okay, well, we've done all the precautions we can. So my friend comes over earlier, sort of earlier than expected, and he knocks on the door and he comes in and he's got one of those gripper tools like you see where it's just a stick with a claw on the end.
Right, like I've seen it at clothing stores where they hang clothing up like all the way to the ceiling and the customers can't necessarily reach it, so a clerk will come by and say, oh, which one did you want? And they'll reach with one of those and like grip the hanger and bring it down to the customer, those kind of things. I've seen it for that. But I've also seen infomercials for people that don't want to get up when they're watching TV, they can use that type of device to pick up the remote or something. So, I mean, they're out there.
The one thing that I always come back to with one of these claw tool things, the thing that I always remember about these, is back in Illinois when we lived in a condo, we had a couple instances where somehow a bat had gotten into the hallway. And it was perched, kind of just hanging on the hallway. Had up towards the ceiling, it had these parts of the wall that were made out of bricks. And the bat could get just enough purchase with its toes on the brick wall that it could just sit there and hang on the wall. And one time, out of the two times I remember this happening, one time I borrowed a net from an old friend of mine, and Jen and I actually, you know, we rescued the bat and took it outside.
Yeah.
Which was one of the weirdest and kind of freakiest things that I've ever done. In a way, because you don't go through life thinking, oh, well, one day I'm going to, you know, I'm going to remove a bat.
Well, what we had to do was, like, put the net over the bat who was hanging on the wall and kind of, like, nudge him with it so he'd move.
Yeah.
And when he moved, he fell into the net. Yeah. And then we just brought him right out the door. And he was kind of dazed by this point, even though he was not hurt at all. And so we had to, like, take the net and, like, slowly put it by the, sort of the top part of a trunk of a tree and just kind of, like, nudge him in the general direction of get on the tree, you know? And then he finally attached to the tree, and I could take the net off of him, and I just, like, kind of stood there and waited for him to actually, like, you know, not be stunned and scared, and he kind of, like, climbed up a little bit more than he
flew
away.
I just remember the process of, because the bat had almost worked himself up into the corner in such an angle that I almost couldn't get the net around him. And the last thing I wanted to do was have the thing, fluttering around in the hallway. But I had just enough clearance that I could do it. And I remember, bats are blind, so they see the world through sound. And I remember as I'm trying to kind of nudge this thing to go into the net, it's making these clicking noises.
Yeah, it's trying to identify what's coming at it.
Right, and it's just kind of freaking, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of freaking me out a little bit, but I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do this. And I remember, you know, we lived in this condo, and the majority of the people who lived there besides us were seniors. You know, we're elderly folks, which, who cares? And one of the guys came out, and he, I'm not sure if he brought his little grabber or if he suggested it.
Oh, yeah, like grab like, the little bat, yeah, take him out the door. Him.
We'll just grab him with my, you know, we'll grab him with my clawy hand, and we'll just take him out. Like, no, let's not do that.
Poor little guy. You don't want to squish him.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably, if you could do it well and quick, you probably wouldn't actually injure the thing. But that's just too freaky. I wouldn't mm-hmm. do that.
No, but a net worked just fine. I stuck him on the tree, and he was kind of dazed. Like, what happened to me? And then he eventually figured out he was outside, and he was okay.
And the second time that a bat came in, I don't actually know how it went out. I think we tried to get it.
Yeah, and it moved, and it just wasn't fine.
That time, mm-hmm. if it was whatever bat it was, I don't know if it was a new bat or the same bat, but it had worked itself up into that corner, and we couldn't get the... We just couldn't get the net around it properly, so it wasn't right. going to mm-hmm. work. And I just remember thinking, well, we'll come back later and see if it moved, and it was gone, so God only knows what happened to it.
Maybe the guy came back with the grabber and got him.
Yeah, maybe
I don't
he
know.
Just took charge.
Yeah.
And, you know, he went after it with his claw hand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But getting back to tuna times. So my friend comes over. And he comes in with this tool, this grabber tool. And he just pulls the stove out, maybe about 6 inches away from the wall. And I knew that from the way that this stove was put in there, that it had to have a certain amount of slack in the hose between the oven and the stove, because there's no other way you could hook it up. I just said between the oven and the stove.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to catch that. Uh-huh.
Between the stove and the wall.
Right.
Because there's no other way a human being could fit back there. Because you have to understand that where this thing is, there's no clearance on either side of it. So it'd be impossible for you to push the stove up against the wall and then connect it to the gas line in the kitchen. It would be impossible. So clearly... The way this thing was hooked up is someone stood between the stove and the wall, and they connected the gas line and then just pushed the stove up against the wall. Well, he pulls it out about 6 inches, and he's tall enough that he could actually lean over. He could completely lean over the stove and see behind it, which I don't think I could do.
Well, like you said, your friend is tall,
yeah.
So that's where this comes in.
And he just took his grabber, and he went back there, and he fished the tuna right out, and we...
That was the end of that? And I wasn't even awake for
no,
it.
We pushed the stove. Sleeping. We pushed the stove against a wall, and it's been fine. Jen's actually since eaten the tuna that was back there.
It was no problem. It wasn't even... The can wasn't even dented. It was fine, you know?
No.
And the birds did not have to be put in those little carriers that they hate. So, you know.
So I guess from a purely procedural standpoint, we didn't necessarily take all the precautions that we could have. I think if he had said, okay, this ain't working, we're gonna really have to pull this thing out, I would have said, okay, well, give me a minute and let's get these birds outside before we do anything else, just in case. But turned out, you know, crisis averted. So hooray for that. And speaking of failures, I have a sound clip from not our last episode, but the one before. I actually meant to play this on the last show, but I completely forgot. So I'm going to play this now. This is from when we were having that discussion about how there were all of these, it seems like looking backwards in history, that there were these potential times when you and I could have met.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to play the clip. Because speaking of that radio station that I worked at, which I also interned at, and I spent from, it was like November of 2005, I think that sounds about right.
Uh-huh.
Through June of 2006.
Uh-huh.
Was the time that I
I wonder if you're getting what I'm
to
saying
that radio
here.
Station, and I was going there at times.
I think I might.
Three or four days out of the week.
I'm just going to let this
that
play
was
out
because
the stupid sound app doesn't pause
that was
clips.
In the area that you were from.
Right.
But mm-hmm. by then, you were already in college, so you probably weren't
there
very often.
Yeah, 2005, 2006.
But I didn't catch it either. But there's a reason I didn't catch it.
7 years to get through because art ed should be a double major, man, really. You do all the coursework, you do all the teaching work, and then you do all the artwork. You have all these different classes.
Yeah. So here's what we're getting at that people might not be noticing right away.
2004 to 2005, I was probably...
It was 05 and 06.
Okay, so, 06. So we get the idea here. Yeah, we got married in 2004, so... having not met until 2005, 2006, I don't know, maybe we are Time Lords. I'm not sure. Maybe this is, in fact, the TARDIS.
I guess. No, so somehow... Somehow.
Neither one of us caught it. No, I didn't catch it because numbers completely confuse me because I have dyslexia and I cope with it for reading and language, but my number skills are non-existent. So I would have just assumed, I kind of got the context of what he was saying from the time frame he was speaking of and assumed that he had the years right, because I've got no way of knowing. Right. So,
That was the funny part when I was listening back to it. I went, okay, well, I clearly got... The years wrong in that, but then you just
went
right
along with
it. Well,
I just went from
it.
The context because I can't discern the years anyway. Right. So I figured, okay, you're talking about the years when we were doing that, you were doing this, and I was doing that. And where were we when that was happening? And I kind of that's where I went with it. But yeah, realizing later
so
those numbers aren't right.
The actual years should have been 95 into 96.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we got married in 2004, so there's no way that I could have, it just
doesn't work at all. But that's why I didn't catch it, because I wouldn't have. I'm really bad with numbers.
I guess.
And I just do it from context, and this is what happens when you go from context and you can't read the numbers. You end up with things like this,
I guess that, as you get older, you just have this thing where... The years start to blend together more. I don't know.
I mean, I know why I got it wrong, but I don't know why you got it wrong, because you're really good with numbers.
I wasn't even... I mean, tonight, I'm just kind of dragging. I don't really have all the energy I need, and I didn't have that excuse then, so it was just a failure of mental computations or something.
Well, I went from context. I thought, okay, what was I doing in the years that you're describing? Because I don't really think in numbers. So there we go.
We bought a new blender.
We did. Mm-hmm.
So that's really exciting. I mean, it's just like...
Well, you've used it a couple of times since then. So, hold on. I'm getting a strange electronic sound.
Oh, is
I
your
bet phone
on?
My phone
on?
Is on. Yeah, my phone is on. Let me turn that off.
I didn't hear it over here, so hopefully
maybe
that means
it's
not
up,
on the recording. But
otherwise, I'll be silent for us instead. Hooray.
A better plan would be to just...
I'm turning off the phone.
Turn it off, like right now. I'm going to turn off Wi-Fi on my... Oops.
Uh-oh, what'd you do?
Okay. I just turned off the Wi-Fi on my iPad.
Okay.
Which really isn't a huge deal, but if somebody tweets me or... I get a message of some kind, it'll make a noise. And everyone will hear it on the show. And that ain't going to help nobody. So, my blender that I've had ever since a long time ago died. I think we discussed that already. I don't remember.
Maybe.
And I didn't need... I mean, how is it that we've gotten to the point where there's tiers of blenders? And that's T-I-E-R-S of blenders. How do we get to this point where there's just
so many different kinds of blenders, where it ranges from you can get your basic blender to the point where you can spend hundreds of dollars on a blender. Are you really going to tell me that your $200 blender is blending things better than a regular one? I understand that at a certain level, that's probably true, but I just feel like, really, all I ever use my blender for is to make smoothies. And this is a process of taking a piece of fruit, some coconut milk, and some ice, and making it into a liquid. This does not require hundreds of dollars of advanced technology. So, I did a little research online, and I realized that our favorite store, the Triple B, Bed Bath Beyond, as everyone else might know it, had a basic blender for $20, and I had coupons. So I said, let's go out to the Triple B, get us a blender. And I've used it a few times, and it's taken a couple times to kind of get used to it. One of the nice things about the old blender that died was it was just simple. You just toss everything in. And I'm not really a blender expert, a blend spurt. So I can't size up blenders like I can size up, say, guitars, where I can go, oh yeah, look at this interesting set of features. So it's taken a few times to really kind of find the sweet spot, but I feel like I've got it now. And really the trick is that at the very end of the blender switch bank, there's a thing that says icy drink. And if you hit that one, it seems to grind the ice better. Which, if you think about it...
Well, that's a good descriptor.
Makes sense.
You know? What are you trying to blend? Icy drinks? Well, here's the button for that.
The manual with this thing was like 3 pages long. And it pretty much said, don't use it. Like, don't do anything. Or do everything and then plug it in and turn it on. And in the sense of, put the blender thing on the thing, put all the stuff in the thing, and then plug it in. And that's pretty much all it said. It's like, hey, thanks for your valuable tips, Hamilton Beach.
Yep.
But so far it's working fine. And if we're lucky, we'll have it for years to come. We'll treasure it for always.
Yeah, well, we do tend to use things until they fall apart, pretty much.
Yeah.
We don't really shop.
I've gone through enough kind of obsessive kitchen gadget buying over the years to realize that it's really, there's just no point in buying the super high-end stuff unless you just have money to burn. I mean, honestly, I've bought so many dumb things that didn't really work well, that it's just, I'd rather just get the low-end thing and use it until it dies and get another low-end thing.
And it's taken years, you know?
Well, yeah, generally. I mean, the other one, you know, the other one lasted a long time, and if it didn't have that stupid spigot attachment, it actually would have been fine, because once that spigot attachment thing fell apart, that was when it started to leak. It had one other problem with a button, but that was actually kind of manageable. But a stupid spigot attachment thing, which never worked, if that hadn't fallen apart, it would have been fine. But oh well.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to mention, oh, by the way, this all kind of ties in, but we were on ERKPod episode 500, sort of, I don't know if by proxy is the right way to phrase this, but when ERK was in America earlier this year, he stopped by for a few days. And what ERK does is he records every minute that he's not at home, so
he has hours every minute, but he records quite a bit. It's really entertaining.
I think that if he had the capacity, like if the technology were there, when Eric goes on one of his big trips, if he could just throw open a live audio stream the entire time he was gone, that's what he would do. And I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying, I think, because when Eric was here in 2012, he did some recording, and then he had his iPhone stolen, and he did some recording, I think, on Audio Boo, and then he had his iPhone stolen, and there was kind of a break, and then he had his iPhone, and then he bought a new iPhone in Portland, but he didn't have any internet access, so he could only use it on Wi-Fi. I mean, he couldn't use it all the time. But when he was here earlier this year, he had his iPhone, and I think he'd gotten a SIM card on T-Mobile or something here in the U.S., and he was just audio booing everywhere and recording everywhere. And again, I'm not criticizing any of that, but he has a lot of these recordings, and when he was here, he did the same thing. So it's actually ErkPod episode 500, and we'll put a link in our show notes if you want to go check that out. There's a couple episodes. I think it's 500 and 501 has us in it at various points, but 500 is, you know, while he was here. And you can hear, all of our exciting trips to Denny's.
Yeah.
hear the day that Eric and I were just sitting here in the studio, and he was looking up, fun trivia about San Luis Obispo and LAX, and why is there an X in LAX? What does the X stand for? Well, if you want to find out, you can go listen to that. And I guess we should just work on this now and say that our keyword for this episode will just be meh, M-E-H. So yeah, you go to hypernonsense.com/meh. You'll get this episode and the show notes, the full show notes, and you can find those links. We have some feedback from the website we're going to go over, so why don't you read
okay.
the comments.
Okay, so this one is from Matt Sams, and he writes this. Why somnostatic tag? ! Me, no, why tag there for this? The first no is N-O, the second one is K-N-O-W. Me am webmaster for somnostatic, and am the guardian of name somnostatic. Please transfer dollars to my bank account, and then you will have many fortunes sent to you and feng shui. I would request you to give me reason for organization of desserts using somnostatic for your pleasure. All your base are belong to me. I have lots of organic positions for you to service your needs. Please forgive Nixon for his shortcomings. My team will give you a team to pretend in unicorns. Everyone dance in a nightclub. Provide me with your phone number so I can text you my pictures of my love. P.S. I'm not spamming. If you still want us to not contact me, tags you use will be recycled. P.P.S. Just saying.
Yeah, that's a really good comment. And at least...
Oh, it's brilliant.
At least a little proof that the WordPress spam plugin is either really good or actually not that good at all, because
this reads like spam, which is what he was shooting for.
It just posted normally, so.
Or maybe, I don't know, do you have to sign in to leave a comment? Maybe it knows who he is. If you don't,
But I have, Matt's posted other comments have been approved, so if he used the same name and email address when he signed in.
Oh, okay, so then maybe the website would say, this guy's already been here, it's fine, yeah.
So anyway, that was highly entertaining. Best
really
comment
good.
Ever. And
I'm not sure which part I like the best. It might be everyone dance in a nightclub.
Yeah. And I tagged it with Somnostatic because that's, Matt's music band name. Though he's been actually going by his own name more. And actually, I'm organizing this right now with Matt. He's in the middle of doing a song a day project for this year, which he's thus far been successful in. So he's recorded well over 200 songs so far this year, and I'm in the process of organizing with him. We're going to have him on as a guest, possibly on the next show.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
To talk about that.
That's really impressive, writing that many songs. I mean, I couldn't do it for sure. You know?
No.
And he just does it. It's great.
Yeah. So read the next comment.
Pulls. Okay. Next comment is from Ben, who says, "Ugh, being sick sucks. I feel your pain, Jen." I'm sure Ben does. He's a lot like me. He's sick a lot.
Yeah.
Just as well, I believe he feels my pain. Yeah, unfortunately for both of us, you know. So, anyway, yeah. Thanks, Ben. I'm somewhat better at this moment, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have one from Ken Turetsky, who says, "You two really went nuts in Vegas, although I'm sure we'll never hear about the really good stuff. Now, while Olive Garden may not have blackjack slots, it does have gluten-free pasta and lots of it, so belly up." And that's from Ken Turetsky.
Yeah.
"It does have gluten-free pasta, but I'm not sure if it has a gluten-free kitchen to go with it. If they're using, you know, if they're using a pot to boil regular pasta in, and then they're just draining that out and then throwing in, you know, gluten-free pasta, you're actually picking up some of the stuff from the previous one, you know?"
You ate there once.
I ate there once and I was okay, but if you had celiac, I don't know that I could recommend it. You know, because I have a tiny bit of tolerance for it. But you still got to be really careful, you know?
Yeah. And a couple other things on Twitter. Ben, again, at BenderBubble, he says, "Don't be lonely on a desert island. I'm listening to."
Aww.
Thanks, Ben. And, you know, the saga of the mystery of Pepe Goes North, the book that we talked about on a couple previous episodes that I remember and Matt remembers, but has seemingly been deleted from all record of history. Well, Nathan put an email into his public library, which to my knowledge, he hasn't gotten a response on yet. So I've actually been contemplating contacting the school.
Oh,
I mean,
well, maybe.
I guess it's possible that I don't really think that the book, that they would still have the book, but maybe there might be someone still working there from then. I mean, it seems really unlikely to me because that was 30 years ago, roughly,
mm-hmm.
And it would seem more likely to me that anybody who was a librarian back then, just, if nothing else, would be retired by now, but you never know. And just, you know, call up and ask for the library and just explain to them the situation and see if anybody has any recollection of the book. It'd be amazing
mm-hmm.
if they actually still had it. And I, you know, I could say to them, "Well, could you just take a picture of the book cover and email it to me? Because we need to verify this thing exists."
Yeah, you know, you might be giving a librarian something fun to track down.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, as I've stated, the public school I went to, the district wasn't very large, and I suspect that they probably held on to things as long as they were even remotely useful. So maybe if the book was still in a viable level of condition, it might still be kicking around out there. Wouldn't hurt. I mean, it wouldn't be any harm.
No, you know, and all they can do is say no, or we have no idea, or, you know, whatever. It can't hurt. But, you know, maybe you'll be giving a librarian something fun to do, you know? I mean, I would think, like, I like fact-checking things, and I imagine if you're a librarian, you kind of, like, have an interest in tracking down things, like, where did this book go, you know?
Yeah.
So it might be fun for someone.
So while we're not entirely lost still on a desert island with regards to the comments on the website and at least the one Twitter comment, we're still very much on the desert island for iTunes reviews. You know, I use this review cast to tell me how many reviews I have, and it just taunts me every week. It says only 3 reviews. That's what it actually says. It says only 3. It's basically saying, "You suck. No one likes your show. you have only 3 reviews. You should quit. You should just give up.
That's reading quite a lot into that little numerical data there. You have 3, you know.
If you don't want to give up, if you don't want to give up on podcasting, you should just give up on life altogether.
Oh, come on. This is going way far.
Go live on that desert island. That's what you deserve. And if you're listening to the show via iTunes or the iOS podcast app, it's so simple to leave a review. You just log in. If you go to hybridonsense.com/iTunes in your web browser, it'll take you right to the listing for the show. And, you know, if you're on, depending on how you have everything set up, it may automatically log you into your Apple account. And then, boom, you just click an appropriate star rating, whatever you think is good, 1 to 5. And you leave a short little comment. It's not any more complicated than this.
I think it's excellent.
That's right.
There you go.
If the Sweet Pickles kid can do it. If the Sweet Pickles kid from, you know, 1984 can do it. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, speaking of time travel, they didn't necessarily have iTunes back then. But if he can do it, then you can do it.
There you go.
So, we got a couple other things possibly to go over before we close this out. So, this is a little bit of pseudo-local news here. And the story goes like this. A giraffe at a Madison Zoo first licked and then kicked a 24-year-old San Luis Obispo woman who was attempting to trespass into the giraffe exhibit.
Oh, no, why did she do that?
According to Madison police. I'm assuming this is Madison, Wisconsin?
I guess so.
Amanda Hall climbed over one fence and was partially over a second fence that surrounds the giraffe exhibit when Wally, a 2-year-old, apparently rambunctious, 12-foot-tall giraffe, first licked Hall and then turned and kicked her in the face.
Well, he decided she wasn't food.
Yeah, apparently whatever sunscreen she was wearing didn't taste very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Though Hall's injuries were non-life-threatening, staff at the Henry Villas Zoo warns visitors that giraffes are capable of killing lions and that Hall was lucky not to have been more seriously injured. Madison police cited Hall for harassment of zoo animals, which is one of the greatest things you can get cited for.
Harassment of zoo animals. Well, you climbed into their enclosure. I mean, come on.
Which carries apparently a $686 fine.
How'd they pick that number?
I don't even know.
That's an odd number. Well, I guess it's actually an even number, but it's a strange number to select.
I think that there's probably a lot less science that goes into some of these things than we would probably assume. I mean, you think, okay, well, this is, they had a citation, so some official group spent the time to put this into some kind of actual code, you know, some kind of actual ordinance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, okay, what do we got to do today? And they went down their to-do list at the city hall or wherever they get things done out there. Somebody said, well, the last thing on our list here is we gotta sign this thing about harassment of zoo animals. This has got to be a real thing we got to pass because someday somebody's going to want to go in here and hug a giraffe. And they said, well, what's the fine going to be? I don't know. How about $438? Nah, it's too low. How about $892? Nah, it's too low. How about $686? Sure, sounds great.
Well, I got to wonder if there was like, you know, if they had other ordinances that applied to animals and fines regarding abuse of animals or something, you know, and if there was a range, like you can charge them between this amount of dollars and that amount of dollars. And like that, maybe the limit was, you know, what was it? The total was 686. So maybe the minimum was, you know, 685 and they went, okay, 686, you know. The Price is Right or something.
Well, maybe it's just a matter of whoever was in charge of picking fines that day is dyslexic. So They said, look, we got to have a number that I can't be confused by. 686. It's the same both ways.
Yeah.
As long as you don't flip it over. Upside down.
Then it's 989. But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and then it says, Hall told police officers she climbed into the exhibit area because she loves giraffes. Wonder how she feels about him now.
Was she sober when this happened? What on earth possesses a person to do this?
I remember once, years ago, I went to a zoo. It had to be back in Illinois. I don't remember which zoo it was. And I remember that there was this giraffe. They had kind of this pseudo-giraffe habitat. And the giraffes could, and they had it, you know, where the giraffes could be inside, but then they could also sort of go through a passageway and be outside. And if you went into this building that backed up to these exhibits, then, you know, you could see kind of the backside of the thing and of the exhibit, and the, you know, you might actually see a giraffe inside. And they had these fences, these simple little fences that kind of, you know, cordoned off this interior area. And there was a giraffe in there, and it was trying its hardest to get its head through this fence thing that they had. And I was just sitting there watching it, and it was so weird. It was sitting there, and they were like ropes. They weren't like, it wasn't like a chain link fence or, you know, something that an animal could hurt itself on. But it was trying so hard to get through its head through this fence thing, and I'm just kind of watching it going, what's your game, giraffe? What are you up to?
Somebody in the crowd have a box of cereal, you know?
The only thing I can figure is it...
Because people used to do that. They'd bring, was the cereal called Sugar Smacks, I think? Little sugary things.
Uh-huh.
And they'd go to one of the zoos in Illinois where, at the time when we were kids, the giraffes could actually kind of reach a little bit into the crowd way up above a fence.
No,
and if you
no,
like,
yeah, this was not that.
Yeah, no, there was a zoo like that. And if parents put their child on their shoulders, the kid could feed the giraffe like this. And they found out that the giraffes really liked the Sugar Smack cereal. So they were coming up to get that. It was probably a horrible thing for them to have. And, you know, dangerous all around. But I remember that. I was really little when that was happening.
I'm sure that no longer happens.
One would hope, you know?
Yeah, I think that, that just doesn't sound good at all.
It wasn't allowed at all. I mean, you'd have to look around and make sure you wouldn't get caught. But people did it, like, every time I've been to the zoo, people were doing it.
You know, it's one thing if you want to stand out on the Pismo Pier and toss a popcorn piece at a seagull. Because, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, a giraffe has to go through, I mean, I'm assuming that giraffes are, at some level, they're probably bred in captivity.
I would think
so. But I think that probably a certain number of them are probably, for lack of a better term, they're probably captured and, you know, shipped across the world to get to zoos. And I just figure, okay, well, you've already committed, depending on how you feel about such things, you've already committed a pretty serious injustice against this wild animal, and now you're just going to, allow it to eat cereal, allow it to eat Sugar Smacks, something that it would never encounter in the wild.
Right, but oh, it wanted them, and
well,
all the giraffes would come marching right over and stretch it out.
I have to imagine that every creature on the earth that can eat, you know, can actually ingest, and for that matter, digest, can actually taste human food, especially the really processed stuff like, you know, Smacks cereal, that once that happens, once you get that, you know, more than once, it must completely rewire your brain. Like, how are you ever going to look at a fruit hanging off a tree? Or,
well, I'm sure they'd still eat that, but given the option?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know about this giraffe lady. And I sincerely hope if, and I almost want to say when, just because of this world we live in, but I'm going to say if, she files a lawsuit, when it gets into court, you know, they just go, look, come on, you jumped into the giraffe.
Right. You climbed over not one, but two fences to get there. The first fence wasn't a clue that you shouldn't go. You climbed the second one, too. Yeah.
And I don't know if just people are just not that bright or how this happens, but maybe, you know, maybe we've just had too many decades now of every kind of animal being turned into, you know, a cuddly cartoon character that people don't realize that they're just wild animals. Well, I'm not trying to say that they're dumb, but they're not conditioned to be, you know, not every creature on this earth is conditioned to and or naturally wants to be your pet, right, slash your lap animal.
Well, what I think it is, though, I don't know if it's necessarily conditioned by Disney, so to speak, but I think that, you know, the people that do these things, I think they realize that these are wild animals. They're not someone's pet. But somehow they feel that they themselves are special. And so these animals are going to be nice to them because they're special and wonderful. You know?
Yeah.
They're the exceptional person there.
I watched a series of videos that this woman had posted to YouTube. And she's in Alaska. And she's, you know, she goes out on her back porch. And there's these bald eagles. There's a couple of bald eagles that come, and they just sit on her porch. And she's got a couple of cats. And she goes out there, you know, the cats are on the porch, and the eagles come, and they sit on the top rail of the porch. And she's just out there talking to them, and she's talking to them, and she says things like, she'll say to the cat, "Oh, hey, Fluffy McFurpants, here's your friend, Mrs. Bald Eagle." Like, no. They're not friends.
No, the eagles are thinking about whether or not they can pick up the cat and carry it off as food.
Yeah. That's why they're there. They're trying to figure out. And they've got enough sense, I guess, to realize that if the human is there, it's going to be harder for them to get away with the cats. So as long as... So I'm really hoping...
I mean, I don't think these eagles are sitting on her porch because they think she's an amazing human and wants to be her friend. I think they want to eat her cats.
And there's also a fox that comes. And this is the part of this whole thing that I think is troublesome. And I haven't watched all of her videos, so I haven't been able to entirely discern this. But I think at the very least that she feeds the fox.
So that's not good. This is why the fox comes back.
It's not because it likes you or your house or it loves you. It's because it's determined
it's food.
That this is a source of food. And I don't think that she's proactively doing anything to feed the bald eagles, because how do you even do that?
So. I don't think so either. But, I mean, the one video you showed me, it was the two cats on the porch that are kind of looking like, okay, I'm going to be like crawling under the chair here now. Bye. You know, and staring at the eagles.
Well,
and she came up to the eagle, and I don't know if she zoomed in, but she seemed to be very close to it.
Oh, she was within arm's length.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I mean, it could have reached out and got her real easily.
Yeah.
And it was making this face that birds make when they're saying, no, go away.
Right.
And it had like its beak open, and it was making a noise. And she'd get closer, and it was making the noise louder, and it was starting to stick its wings out, like, I'm going to get you, back off. And she's sitting there filming it, like, oh, this is wonderful. I'm like, it's going to torture you now with its claws. What are you doing? You know, go away. It's telling you go away. It's doing everything it can to say, hey, human, I don't like this. Go away. And she's sitting there with her camera, like, it's no big deal. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm certain that if I lived somewhere where a bald eagle would come and sit on my porch, I would attempt to photograph it and video it up to a point.
Well, like from inside the house,
but,
you know, or you can't know, get in.
I would not walk up to within an arm's length of that thing I mean,
if you've seen its talons, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's
going to cause damage. It's designed to grab creatures and dig its talons into their flesh so it can carry them off for food. What do you think's going to happen to your arm, you know?
It's a bird of prey. And if you've ever seen a person that handles those kinds of birds, they usually have to wear really heavy gloves in order to protect themselves.
Even with falcons that are like tiny compared to eagles.
Yeah, you know? That's what I mean. It's like, and that's not even in a case where the bird is feeling threatened. It's actually in a place where the bird is relaxed and understands what it's doing. It's basically using that person's arm as a perch, and it's been trained to do that. But by nature of how this thing was designed, it has super sharp talons on its feet. So if it just comes and lands on your skin, it's going to shred up your hand, your arm. So,
Yeah,
I don't know.
But she's probably one of those people that thinks she's just special, you know?
Do we need to start a public service campaign called Harassment Eagle?
Where maybe.
it's like if, you know, hi, kids, I'm Harassment Eagle.
Yeah, exactly.
If you see me on your porch, don't come too close.
Right.
Don't harass me.
Well, this is the difference between us removing the bat from the house or from the hallway and these people that want to make friends with the wild animals, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're more than an arm's length away from the bat at all times. We had a net it couldn't easily extract itself from. We carried it out of doors. We didn't want it on our porch or anything. Found an appropriate place for the bat to be, kind of got him on there and let him be and let him go, you know? At no time did we want to go and pet this thing or,
right. Yeah.
Or make it our new pet or, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't build a bat house to put on our porch hoping he'll come back, you know? No, it's a wild creature. It's going to die in here. Get him out. Off he goes. Don't go and try to make them your pet, you know?
All right. Well, you got anything else before we close this thing out?
I had a little spam thing that hit our website. Let's see if I can find it. It's very short. Okay, so over at No Market Collective, we have a bunch of different blogs and stuff, and some of them are about video games, and we get a lot of spam. We were getting spam this week earlier. Yeah, from a bunch of different spam sites where, you know, they have word salad for a comment, and their name is the name of a company or a product, and there's just so happens to be a URL in there somewhere, you know, that kind of thing. And it was, they were all hitting this page that had photos from one of the fairs we went to. It had a pig and a cow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had nothing to do with anything they were doing. So this one posted on a post I did about the Hearthstone video game, specifically having to do with unlocking the warrior deck in the game. Okay, you don't really need to know anything more than that. So we get this comment, and the person's name is Re, Modification Loan. Yeah, that's on your birth certificate. Mm-hmm.
You know? Warrior deck.
Yeah.
Warrior deck. That sounds like my new metal band name. Warrior deck. This Friday at the Metro. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Listen to songs about rage quitting when the other guy gets the better card. So the comment was left. I mean, there was an email with somebody's name. Who knows if that's really their email, if this is a hacked email. And then there was a link to Michigan mortgage modifications. Okay, so I'm wondering how the Hearthstone game and the Warrior deck have anything to do with modification loans for mortgages. I don't know. So here's their comment. When someone searches for his necessary thing, so he/she desires to be available in that detail, therefore that thing is maintained over here. That's their comment.
Necessary thing?
Yes, when someone searches for his necessary thing, so he/she desires to be available in that detail, therefore that thing is maintained over here. I just thought it was silly. And then I, spammed it off my website.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And it's on a video game thing. It's where did you get the idea that mortgage modification had anything to do with video games? You know?
Yeah.
If you didn't know this was a video game... There's a lot of, I put a lot of screenshots in there. It should have been a clue, you know?
Yeah, a couple other things we should mention. And I'm going to include this as the album art for the episode, and we'll post it on the web as well. But Nathan made an actual Electric Man and Undervolt cartoon.
He did, and it's great. It's really good.
We'll put that. Also, Jen is doing a series of interviews for podcasternews.com.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interviewing women who podcast. I'm bringing news about, you know, what do you podcast? When did you start? And other questions like that. But so if you're out there listening and you'd like to be a part of that, you can contact me on Twitter at Queen of Haiku. Very easy to do, and we can set that up. But it's so much fun. I'm having the greatest fun doing this gig.
Well,
you know?
It's a mixed, you could call it a mixed media project. Some of the entries are just text interviews, but you've posted your first audio interview.
Yes, with Lazy Daisy Quilts. She makes quilts and she podcasts about them. In short, go listen to it. It's a really fun episode and I was super excited to start off. And I have another episode coming up in September.
So we'll have a link to that. And I think the necessary thing right now is to end this show.
All right.
So I'm here to search for the detail of my necessary thing.
Right.
I found it over here.
Right. It's maintained over here. Yeah. Search for the necessary thing. It's maintained over here. Mm-hmm.
It's maintained in the second slot in my soundboard. It's called the closing theme song of the show.
That was the necessary thing.
Yeah. It's maintained over here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening. HyperNonsense.com is our website. You can find everything there. You can go to hypernonsense.com/subscribe and you can see all the different ways you can listen to the show through all the various means and methodologies. iTunes, Stitcher, RSS. You can even subscribe through email. And all we do through that subscription is when we post a new show, you get an email that gives you that information. So we won't make you... You know, we won't ask you to have any details that are maintained anywhere. You'll just get show updates. So, check that out. Also, TuneIn, we're on that, and Spreaker as well. And if you're hearing this some other way, and you would like our show to be in another thing, you can email us, show@hypernonsense.com.
And it will be maintained over there.
And it will do our best to get our necessary detail into that thing. So, at HyperNonsense on Twitter as well. And Jen is at Queen of Haiku. I'm at Shauno on Twitter. So, thank you for listening. Also, we're sorry. We'll try to bring the excitements back next week. So, with any luck, we'll be with you then and possibly have a special guest.
Bye, people.
I hit the loop button.
Okay.
I didn't mean to. I don't want loops. You want loops?
I don't know.
Pod loops?
I don't know.